Thank you, Dr. Behrens. Certainly a pleasure to be here to speak to you today. Things have been going very well for us. We've enjoyed the weather. We've got a lot more snow than you have up there, but the roads have been absolutely wonderful, so I'm certainly pleased with that. And we've been well. Sarah had a bit of a sinus infection, but that seems to have gone away. We've been blessed also with the fact that I'm not on strike. I'm actually a federal employee, so it's kind of nice that we're just continuing on as though nothing's going on. And Sarah's school is on strike, but she's the secretary and a TA, so she goes to work every day. She's even making more money. She's getting paid an extra half hour, so she has to look after the school, so it's kind of neat. So sometimes one person's curse is another person's blessing. So, and then when they settle for this big amount, of course, then the government's going to match it. And we'll get the I doubt it. Dreaming. Never hurts to dream, though, right? I'll read you this. This is pretty good. It was written by Anonymous. I don't know who that guy is, but did he ever write a lot of stuff? It says, work like you don't need the money, love like you've never been hurt, and dance like you do when nobody's watching. I thought that was kind of neat. Certainly be a good philosophy in many ways. You know, a boxer will sometimes ask between rounds, in the middle of a fight, what round is this? Because, of course, he's been going through a beating, been getting pounded, and he's probably pounded the other guy quite a lot. Perhaps he's even a little punch drunk, or he's trying to figure out whether he can last the rest of the fight, or how much energy he can use so that he lasts till the end of the fight, or if he hasn't got enough energy to last till the end of the fight, does he have to knock the guy out, or he's going to lose the round? Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson were supposed to fight this year. Some of you probably saw where they were at their news conference, and Tyson starts running over there and starts a fight, you know, at the news conference. This is the guy who was wanting to get a boxing permit. You know, he wanted to get a license to be able to fight there. And, of course, he wasn't allowed that license. I thought, hooray, there is some justice. $300 million they figure they would have lost in their economy because they didn't hold the fight, but they actually made the decision, you are not fighting here. So I thought, there's still some good stuff in this world. But it'll probably happen somewhere else. They'll like to figure out, well, we can fight over here or fight over there and get this big purse that's going to be given to them, of course, for fighting. And who's going to be standing there when it's over? You know, which one's going to win? Well, nobody really knows. But sometimes, you know, brethren, we feel like asking the question, what round is this? We've been through quite a lot. And sometimes we feel like we've been through maybe a boxing match. I don't know if any of you have ever been boxers. You might, if you have, you know more about it than I do. But I've talked to quite a few guys who were boxers, one who was Golden Gloves boxer. And the kind of training that they have to go through and the kind of beatings that they take, the kind of energy levels that you have to fight. This one fella, anyway, told me that there's nothing else like it. There's no other sport. It doesn't matter how much you work out at running or whatever it is. Boxers have so, there's just so much energy that you have to use that, you know, at the end of a fight, oftentimes they can't hold their arms up. They can't lift their arms up because they've been doing so much and it's so difficult. Now, sometimes we might feel like we've been a little beat up spiritually, possibly. Punched about the head a little bit. I don't know if any of you have ever been corked real good. You know, you get really hammered one time. I did one time. I just kept talking one time until somebody shut my mouth. It was at school. I can still remember today. I saw this fist coming, you know, just boom, it got me right there. And I don't remember much after that, except I kept quiet for a while. Didn't say too much. But, you know, sometimes you feel like that. You've been hit around a little bit. I was watching a human interest story the other night about how some people don't give up. And it showed this girl who was a jockey. And it showed her actually in a race, and she was in this race, and she's going along, and the horse, for some reason, trips, goes straight forward. She goes right over top the horse. The horse lands on her. A jockey was right behind her with another horse, ran right over top of her with the horse, and I noticed just kept going, but he couldn't stop. He couldn't do anything. Just kept on going. So the girl had a broken back. She had multiple injuries. A miracle she wasn't killed, really. 1,200-pound horse. They said, you know, this horse she was riding, 1,200 pounds, fell right on her. The other one stepped right on her, right in the middle of her back, broke her back, multiple other injuries. She's in the hospital, and she vows she's going to ride again. So she goes into rehab, actually gets well enough that she goes back riding again. So the first race, she gets on her horse, and away they go around the corner. She's riding around the corner. Two horses just in front of her, just at the right time, cut in, and down goes her horse again. She lands right on the ground, and the horse lands right on top of her again. Hit her, I guess, on her leg or something. And, of course, you would kind of wonder at that time, if you were that person, does God really like me? What did I do? What did I do to deserve this? You know, you can't hardly believe that. You would kind of think, fate is against me. And yet, she lived through it. And I'm not sure if she ever rode again. I don't think so. But it was amazing to me to see, you know, how something like that and how you go through something like that. And you're going to go again. You're going to get up. And you're going to be rehabilitated and you're going to ride again. It was amazing to see that. But, you know, you feel sometimes going through life that, you know, you get one thing and then another. And many people I know have suffered a lot through life. And it's not just us. It's not just church members by any means. And God shows us that very clear in His Word. You know, don't think it's just you. We sometimes think that there are others who just breeze through life. You know, you see them in their nice big houses and their big fancy cars. But you really don't see the real life. All you see is the outside. And that's why you tend to think that, oh, well, nobody else has the problems that I have. Or my problems are bigger than theirs. And they don't seem to have any difficulties. And you just don't really see their life. You don't know what their marriage is like. You don't know what they've gone through. You don't even know their history of what might have happened to them years ago. And so I think sometimes we have to just take stock a little bit and understand that we face things the same as everybody else does. And one of the things that we have to understand, I believe too, is that we haven't faced anything that Jesus Christ hasn't faced. He's never asked us to do anything that He won't do Himself. I like some of these little sayings in some of these magazines you get. Henry Ford once said, "Failure is the opportunity to begin again, more intelligently." There's a lot of truth in that. You start over again. Oh, this time I'm going to do it right. I'm not going to make that mistake. But I think it's important to understand that Jesus doesn't ask us to go through anything and that He hasn't done Himself. And I like to use the analogy of a boxer because a boxer or a fighter like that goes through a lot. They go through a tremendous amount. Sometimes you see these guys, you think, how did he learn to skip like that? You know, you try to get the boys in school sometimes to take a skipping rope and skip. And they think, skipping? I'm not going to skip. That's for girls. You know. Then you see Mike Tyson. How did he ever learn to do that? Well, by doing it thousands and thousands and thousands of times because he wants to be in shape. You've got to be in shape. And so we look at some of these things that they go through, running, skipping, like I said, sparring, and there's some pretty good analogies, weight training. These guys go through an incredible amount, and yet when they're in the middle of the fight, sometimes they have to ask, what round is this? They're in the middle of their corner and somebody's trying to give them whatever they need. What round is this? What round am I in? Can I make it through to the end of the fight? Well, I want to show today that we are like those fighters, like those boxers who are going through extensive training, unbelievable training, and yet Jesus went through similar training and testing, and He understands exactly our situation perfectly. It almost seems like this week is the week of, you know, people dying and health problems. Mr. Gargis mentioned that his brother-in-law died this week over in Kelowna, was it? Over in B.C., so he had to go over there, so it's... You know, there's a lot of this that's going on, and when you listen to announcements sometimes, you think, well, everybody's dying. Everybody's sick. And you listen, it doesn't matter who it is, you listen to the announcements on, sometimes we go on the website and we'll listen to different services around all over the place at different websites. And you'll hear this person's sick and that one's sick, and sometimes I'll get updates from people that I know, and they'll send something like an update. And there's a whole long list of people who are sick and people who have problems and difficulties. And it's just the way it is. That's the way it is. We're growing older. We don't want to admit it. We try to make sure we look as young as we can, but we are growing older. We all are. And that's just the way life is. Jesus made it that way. God designed it that way, so that we will have testing, training, and we will be ready. That's the whole story, isn't it? That boxer, when he's in the middle of the fight, it's too late then for training. He had better done his training. And he'll be very grateful that he's in the middle of this fight. He'd be very grateful if he did that, you know, 5,000 skippings on a skipping rope for, you know, twice a day for the next, you know, for 10 weeks or whatever it is. They train like that. It's unbelievable what they go through. But they know that when they're in the middle of that fight, and you've got to be able to punch, and you've got to be able to hold your arms up and keep your defenses up, because if you don't, you just get your head pounded in. And he'll be in the middle of that fight and very, very grateful for what he went through. And you know, we've gone through a lot of things that we're going to be very grateful for. We will be, because we haven't seen anything yet. That's the sort of bottom line. Wait a minute, you don't know what's coming yet. We look in God's Word, and thankfully He's revealed a lot to us. You know, we've had some trials, we've had some problems, but we haven't seen anything. You know, yeah, it's difficult, it's tough. We've had some really bad situations with people, I know that. We went to the hospital last week, and you see a person laying there that just a shell basically left of what he was just 4 or 5 years ago. And it's shocking to see that. But it's too late now, you know, to go back and say, well, I wish I had done this or I wish I had done that. We don't want to be that way. We want to say, well, I'm glad. I'm glad that I'm following God's way of life, because you can't change it. Once a person's on their deathbed, or they're going, you know, once that's done, once you're in the grave, it's all done. Of course, we'll be resurrected, gratefully, thankfully. But we've got to be doing the things that need to be done. And Jesus did those things on the earth when he was here. He did what needed to be done, and then his life was finished. At that time, his physical life was done. Let's go to Hebrews 4 and verse 15. Some of these very, very encouraging scriptures that we need to keep in our minds and that we need to be aware of, that help us to do better, that help us to keep plugging along. God understands our weaknesses, thankfully. We have a God who understands. What if it had been different that Jesus had never experienced humanity or being a human being? What if he hadn't made that choice? I'm going to volunteer to be a human being. Can you imagine how difficult it would be for Christ and God the Father to understand what weakness is? It would be very difficult for them to understand. How they'd be going like questions like, how can they do that? How can they be so weak? How can they not know what they should be doing? How can they make mistakes like that? Even though I'm helping them, they still make mistakes. Now, God, it would be puzzling. But Jesus isn't like that. Christ understands. Verse 15, we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. Thankfully, God made that choice, volunteered. I will go and I'll become a human being and I'll find out what it's like for myself. What an incredible blessing that was that he did that. He says, but it was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Christ knows exactly what it's like to be a human being, thankfully. And here's the therefore. You know, you get the statement, and then you go, therefore, let us come boldly to the throne of grace. We can go there with absolute confidence, knowing that Christ understands and God the Father understands what we're going through, the trials and problems and our weaknesses, and he knows exactly what it's like, and he can forgive them just like that, anytime. We can repent on the spot sitting here. That's what's so great about God's way of life. God, I'm sorry. Oh, I did something stupid. I'm really sorry. I'm going to try harder. Not licensed to sin by any means, but understanding of sin, understanding of weakness. That we may obtain mercy. Incredible. What an incredible word. We better give it, and we'll obtain it. And find grace to help in time of need, when we've got problems and difficulties. God will step in. He'll help us. He'll forgive us. We can go there anytime we need help. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 11. God's messages always seem to intertwine really well. Hebrews 9 and verse 11, but Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with the greater and more perfect tabernacle not made with hands, that is not of this creation, not with the blood of goats and calves, that didn't work, but with his own blood he entered the most holy place once for all. Christ spilled his own blood, allowed that to happen, having obtained eternal redemption. And in verse 26, he would then have had to suffer often since the foundation of the world, but now, once at the end of the ages, he has appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Christ came. He went through terrible trials. He went through a fight of a sort, when you think about it. He faced down all kinds of people, faced down all kinds of criticism. The overall philosophy that we should have as fighters, I guess if you want to put it that way, the overall philosophy to keep in mind is really to be happy when we get more training. It's nice to change things, put them in a little different way sometimes. We should be happy when we get more training. If you're a fighter, you know as well as I do, if you've got something coming up, we've got a hockey game coming up, I don't want to play that hockey game unless I've been playing hockey before and unless I've been doing some training, weight training, etc. Because you get out on the ice and pretty soon, halfway through, your legs are like rubber. You can't skate anymore. If you don't train, you're going to be in trouble automatically. And we should be saying all the time, well, I'm really happy that I'm getting this training. I'm really happy now. You're in the middle of the game and you've been working out and you've really done a good job as far as your legs are and your wind and everything. And you're feeling great. You can play right through. You're happy then, because you got that training done. Let's take a look at James, chapter 1 and verse 2. God is giving us training, all kinds of training. He's getting us ready so that when we face these trials and problems, something's going to come up ahead of us, you'll be willing and able to take it on and go ahead and win. James 1 and verse 2, my brethren, count it all joy. Be happy when you're getting training. It's really what he's saying. Count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Why? Because there's a purpose. You'll be able to finish the game. That's what he's saying. Your legs won't feel like rubber. Well, they might, but you'll still finish, be able to skate, and you'll still be able to finish the game. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Here's these guys all down there now at Salt Lake City. It's too late now. If they haven't got their training done, they're finished before they start. If they haven't got their training done on the short track speed skating, and they haven't got their legs in shape and their wind in shape now, it's too late. They're finished. They will not win. They'll lose. It'll be automatic. Unless they get really fluky and everybody else trips, maybe. But if you're not trained, if they're not ready, and those guys haven't done all their cross-country skiing and their weightlifting and their running and whatever it is they have to do, it's too late. Even if they have a day, or they got 2 days left, or 3 days left, or a week before their event, it's too late. They'll have to keep up training until their event. They don't even dare give up for a day or two. You don't dare go start partying and just take a day off or 2 days off. It'll automatically have a deleterious effect on their muscles. So what do these fighters do? What do these boxers do? Well, I talked about the rigorous conditioning they go through. They also are careful with their diet. They're careful with what goes in their mouths and actually even their minds. They even think about, try to think things in a certain way. They go through sparring. They even go through mental training. Oftentimes, when you are in a boxing match or a fight, it's really not even the guy who may be the best who wins. But it's the guy who will keep going. Sometimes in a battle, it's the same thing. Why do people win battles? You know, you see these things on TV and you see these big, you know, big series of people on this side of the hill and on the other side of the hill, and they all go in and they're all fighting and chopping and hacking, and who wins? Well, it's just the last person standing. If they're all dead except one, he wins the battle because he just kept going and he's still standing. When you think about that, you know, it's kind of strange, isn't it? You go into, say an army goes into Afghanistan, and the Russians went in there. Who won the war between the Russians and the Afghans? The Afghans did, because the Russians finally just left. It was just too much trouble. They just left. And so in a sense, you have people who maybe didn't have the biggest guns or the most tanks or whatever, but they won the war because they just kept going. And the Russians just kind of finally got worn down. Now, of course, they've won the battle because the Americans have gone in and bombed the Taliban, and the Northern Alliance are with the Russians. You know, people don't think things through sometimes, but that's what's happened. The Russians now have virtual control of all of Afghanistan, and they're going to have the control over the pipelines that are going to run through there with all the oil. So it's kind of, all this stuff is just so, you know. And how do you win a battle sometimes? Well, through feints, you know. You fake people, do that kind of thing. They do that in war. But it's kind of sad, when, in a sense, that people have gone through a lot of training and then quit. You know, remember that one boxing match, I think, was it Liston? I think it was Liston. This is going to date me, isn't it? Cassius Clay and Sonny Liston. Some of you might have seen it. But here was Liston. I mean, this guy was an animal. He just, you know, his arms were as big as my legs. And, you know, he was just so powerful. He just pounded everybody half to death if he got in a match with him. And he fought with Clay, and they're fighting through there, and they're going along, and Clay kind of hit him a little glancing blow on the side of the head. Liston falls down, out cold. Now, if you believe that, you'd believe anything. It was fixed, obviously. And it was shocking. It was very, very sad to see that. And I'm sure that God thinks that way, that so many people have gone through a lot of training and then have quit halfway through the fight. You just walk away. And nobody respects that. No one respects a fighter who just walks away. You know, if you get beat up and you're in pretty bad shape, that's one thing. You quit, throw in the towel so you don't get injured any further or something like that. But somebody who will just walk away, and it's interesting, the analogy is kind of interesting, because God can't use anybody who just walks away. If he knows the truth has been called, had God's Spirit dwelling in them, God can't use them if they just walk away. Unless somehow he can bring them back into the ring again or somehow recover them. I don't know how he would do that, except maybe through the tribulation, possibly. But as people who are struggling, in a sense, we sometimes ask, well, what round is this? And you can kind of say, well, here's a number of rounds that they fight. The boxer gets in there and first of all, they're kind of feeling each other out. Right? That's what they do in the first round. They don't go in there and start just wailing away generally. They try to figure out, where's the other guy's weaknesses? And Satan does that with us a little bit. We come perhaps into the church and we're all ready to go, and you know, the enthusiasm is incredible, and we're out there just maybe just swinging away, swinging away perhaps, and we don't know what we're swinging at sometimes. I don't know if you ever got into some of this stuff like, you know, white sugar and all this kind of thing. You know, people go to extremes, and somebody who does that usually in a boxing match will usually lose, because the other guy will kind of just wait, and when he's just madly swinging, he'll just wait there and boop, you know. He'll figure out his weaknesses, look for his weaknesses. And we've gone through a lot of these different rounds. Perhaps round one might have been problems with children, losses of, you know, loss of children or whatever. But you know, Jesus went through that. Some of the stuff that Christ went through. Let's go to Psalm 106. And it's sort of like it's written in a very sad way, some of these phrases. Psalm 106, verse 21. What did God go through? What did Jesus go through? The Word. Verse 21 of Psalm 106, they forgot God their Savior, who had done great things in Egypt, wondrous works in the land of Ham, awesome things by the Red Sea. Therefore, he said, he would destroy them. You know, it's when you think of what God went through, what he did for Israel, all of the things that he did, the miracles he performed, and bringing them out, giving them water, and taking care of them. And they forgot. They turned against Christ, turned against God. Isaiah 1 in verse 4. Isaiah chapter 1 in verse 4. Alas, you know, almost like God is just sort of sitting there and just, oh, sort of like a sigh, almost. Alas, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a brood of evildoers, children who are corruptors. They've forsaken the Lord. They have provoked to anger the Holy One of Israel. They have turned away backwards. And God doesn't want our nations to have to go through, you know, a horrible kind of treatment, a horrible kind of beating in a way, so that they wake up. You know, here was their Creator. But look at our nation today, how we have turned our backs on God. The God who has given us everything, the blessings we have had, the unbelievable land. You know, we were just driving down here last night, we saw these two big moose on the side of the road, and these great big moose standing there. And it was just an awesome sight, I think. You know, how many countries in the world can you go to and have blessings like we have in this country? Where a person can go and shoot a moose. You know, some people wouldn't think that's such a great thing, but the kind of meat and the blessings that you have here. And people in the world, you know, we're going into the stores and we're complaining about the food, you know, the prices of the lettuce and the prices of the broccoli and the cauliflower. And I was walking around in there, and I was looking at all these prices, and I thought, whoa, you know, they're different than they were a year ago. But, you know, at least we have cauliflower. At least you can buy it. At least you can actually get something when you walk in the store. There are many stores in the world today that are empty, completely empty. If you went to Afghanistan, I doubt that a year's wage would buy you a cauliflower, because you couldn't get a cauliflower in many of those places. They don't have anything to eat. And there's not only Afghanistan, there's country after country after country in the world today where there's no food. They spend all of their time searching for food, trying to get something to eat. And there are many, many countries like that. And we are so blessed, and here are our people who are turning against God. Not just our turning, they're worse and worse and worse now, it seems, things people are turning from God. Isaiah 1 and verse 2, just go back a little bit. He says, I've nourished and brought up children, they've rebelled against me. I've nourished them, brought them up, took care of them, fed them, given them blessings. And I'm reminded just day by day up there just how serious the situation is in Canada now with this drought. Just day by day. My mom said there's like this much snow down in Saskatchewan. And this is after no rain at all last summer and all fall. No moisture whatsoever. And there's that much snow. And you know how much that's going to turn into? About a quarter inch of rain, a quarter inch of water is all they're going to have. And they're saying now that if they don't get massive amounts of rain, they're going to have absolute disaster. And this is just people out there. These are people who are agricultural people. They're talking about absolute disaster. As far as the farmers are concerned, they'll grow nothing. They will get nothing out of the ground. They won't be able to get anything to even germinate. So here we are. But what's going to happen to our nations? We know how serious the problem is. Our nations are going to go through some pretty tough times. Let's go to Isaiah 3 and verse 12. Some of the problems that are taking place. As for my people, children are their oppressors. That's a pretty good description. You know, we used to have, you know, I had 36 kids in one of my classes when I taught school years ago. I had 36 children in a grade 6 class. And you know, I didn't really have a problem with that class. You know, we're talking about class sizes now and all the difficulties and, oh, we used to have big class. But you know what else we had back then? Discipline. We had discipline. The kids would sit in the class, they would listen when you spoke, when you taught, when you wrote on the chalkboard, you didn't get hit with a piece of chalk in the back of the head. Now their problems are, of course, you cannot handle that many children at all because they just don't, they're not handleable because of the way things are. We've got some classes that you have maybe 12 in them, five of the kids are suspended. You know, and they're suspended because of behavior problems. They'll swear right in the teacher's face. You know, the school we are at, we have a good principal and he's actually straightening things out. But you can see, you know, God had the same problems with his children, with our people. They're the same types. They are oppressors. And here's the sad part about our society, you know. Children are their oppressors. Women rule over them. Oh, my people. And if it's not a woman ruling over them, it'll be somebody who's acting like a woman in many cases, where the emotions are involved and they're making goofy decisions based on emotional issues, which causes difficulty. I mean, the way, when you think of what our society has been doing, how many people are actually wanting the Young Offenders Act to be tightened up? How many people do you think in our country want it to be tightened up? I would bet 95%, maybe 90. Do you know what they're doing with it? They're going to have less of a penalty now than they had before. You're going to find that these kids are going to get, instead of a 3 years maximum sentence for murder, these kids can go and murder their mom and dad and sister and get a 3 year prison sentence. That's the way it was before. It'll probably be 2 years now after the change in the system. You can't believe it. That, to me, that's feather-brained, and it's somebody who's just not thinking. They're not thinking properly. And our society is going that direction. It's a kind of an emotional thing. You say, oh, yes, I don't want to have to punish anybody, right? Most people are, most, especially women, are like that. We don't want to see punishment. You know, who was it who got this thing banned in the prison in Canada, you know? They used to have this big paddle, and the prisoners got out of line. They walloped them with this thing. They'd stretch them out over a, and just let them have it. Give them about 10 on the rear end. I talked to a prison guard up in the penitentiary up in Prince Albert. He used to work there, and he said, once the prisoners got that, they never got it again. They never had a problem with those guys ever again. But that was cruel punishment. So this gal got, you've probably seen it on TV, this little ad that they have about how she went into the prisons and she found this was horrible and cruel. And there probably were some stupid things that went on there and shouldn't have been in there, men going on. But they got rid of that. Now what do you do? You know what they do? The guards will take the prisoners into an elevator, stop the elevator between floors. And there'll be two or three guards in there, and they'll just beat the guy till he's just about dead, but they won't leave any marks. Okay? That's how they do it. Then they take him out, and the guy, they drag him out or out of there. But it's sad, you see? Shouldn't be a prison system in the first place. God's system was not a prison system. But anyway, you get through these things, and our people are going so far offline, so far out of whack when it comes to these decisions. Children are becoming more and more that way, against parents, against authority, disrespectful, and then, of course, do foolish things that result in horrible consequences for them. How about round two? Maybe this is round two for a Christian, somebody who's through this fight or involved in the fight. How about friends who have forsaken us? You know, some of these things are tough, aren't they, to have to kind of go through. When you have a friend, somebody who you think is a real good friend, very close friends that you spend a lot of time with, and they won't even talk to you anymore. They won't even talk to you. It's kind of hard. It's tough to take some of these blows, you know. It would have been easier to say, oh, go along with them and say, okay, well, all right, we're not going to keep the Sabbath anymore. Or we're not going to go to God's holy days anymore. Might have been easier to do that, to keep your friends, to some of these friends, possibly. It's hard. It's difficult to face some of these problems. You feel like you're in a kind of a war, a battle. Let's go to Matthew 26 and verse 56. You might have to stand up. You might not have anybody standing with you. You might have to. A boxer, by the way, really, when you think about it, he's on his own. He's really on his own. Once he's in the fight, yeah, you got people in your corner. There may be some cheering or whatever. There may be some booing. But when you're in the middle, it's all up to you. You're standing there on your own. You're in the battle by yourself. You know, Jesus went through some tough things. Matthew 26 and verse 56. All this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Prophecies are going to take place. They're going to come to pass. And he says, then all the disciples forsook him and fled. They took off. Hard to understand, isn't it? It's sort of hard to understand. We would sort of think, boy, I don't think I'd do that. I wouldn't want to run away on Jesus Christ. But brethren, if you didn't have God's Spirit, you didn't know any better, you'd do exactly the same thing. We would do exactly the same thing. We'd run away. When our necks are at stake, when somebody is there and is going to probably hang you or hang you up on the cross and do the same thing to you, you'd probably be run too. We don't know exactly what would happen. But we've got to know what we're going to do in the future, because you're going to be in a fight and you might be on your own. It's a possibility. We never know that. We just don't know what's going to happen exactly. And then on top of that, Jesus had his disciples go, but he also had Judas. You know, Jesus hasn't gone, you know, he went through everything that we go through. Ever had anybody stab you in the back? Well, of course. Of course we have. Everybody has experienced that sometime or other in their life, very likely. If you haven't, you're very fortunate. Verse 50, Jesus said to him, friend, here's his friend, why have you come? And of course, he came to betray him. Jesus had a rough go. He had a rough time. It would have been tough. It would have been very difficult to have to put up with what he did. Psalm 41 and verse 9, let's go back and see what David wrote. Probably hurts more than anything else is when you have a friend who does this. Psalm 41 and verse 9. Even my own familiar friend, in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up his heel against me. Has that ever happened? Yes. Sure it has. People that you have sometimes sacrificed for, gone out of your way for, did things for, even maybe give them some moose meat. You never know. You know, it's so shocking, though, when it happens. It's like you're in the middle of a fight, and you're in this boxing ring, and then there's somebody hits you from behind. I always go back to hockey. Sorry about that. But I go back to hockey, and it's like you're going for the net, and you're away. You got to break away, and you're skating hard as you can go. You're just going to shoot, and one of your players trips you. You know, it's just so far beyond your imagination, but that's what happens in real life sometimes. Somebody that you trust, somebody that you feel is your friend. And these are people who were David's friends. They turned on him. He had a rough go in many, many areas. Psalm 55 and verse 12. David was turned on by lots of people. Psalm 55 and verse 12. He made his own mistakes as well. You could say that one of David's friends was turned on by David too. Really, when you think about it, one of his mighty men, David turned on him too. It happens because human beings are this way sometimes. Verse 12, for it is not an enemy who reproaches me. Then I could bear it. Then I could expect it. Nor is it one who hates me who has exalted himself against me. Then I could hide from him. But it was you, a man my equal, my companion and my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together, walked to the house of God in the throng. You know, there's nothing new under the sun when these things happen. Yet it can really blow a person out of the water. It can, if you're not expecting it. Boy, if that's the way people are, I'm not going to have anything to do with. Well, Jesus went through all these kinds of things, so he knew exactly what was going on. David's children turned against him. His own son tried to murder him, tried to kill him, tried to take the throne. Horrid, horrid kind of things that happen. God doesn't want us to be that way, obviously, but they can sure shock us when it happens. Somebody throws a sucker punch, a punch you're not expecting. Bang. Round three. Maybe another round could be some of the acquaintances that we run into at times. And there are people who hate us and they don't even know us. There are. People who know about your religion. If they find out about your religion, they will hate you. Don't even know who you are. Don't know anything about you, but they're going to hate you. They'll actually hate us. That spirit is out there. It's the same spirit that Jesus faced in the Pharisees and Sadducees. He turned to them and said, "You want to kill me?" "What? Us? We want to kill you? What's the matter with you? You don't understand." He understood perfectly. That's exactly what they wanted to do. John 7 and verse 19. John chapter 7 and verse 19. When he faced them with this, they were shocked in a way that, but I believe it was because they didn't believe that he could see through them, and he did. John 9, or John 7 and verse 19. "Did not Moses give you the law?" So you guys think that, you know, you're really going to keep the law and all this? "Didn't Moses give you the law? Yet none of you actually keeps the law. Why do you seek to kill me?" And of course they said, "Oh no, we wouldn't do things such as that." But there will be people who will do that. There will be people who we don't expect will turn against us, or there'll be some who will try to get us. You know, it's sort of hard to fathom that, because when you meet people out there, they seem nice. You know, the people that you work with, they seem nice people and that kind of thing. But there's going to be a time somehow that Satan gets to them or whatever. That spirit of evil, the spirit of death, Satan is a killer, and he will get to people. And the religion is what he's going to use to do it, to try to destroy us. Round four. There'll be trouble with those who are over us at times. Problems with maybe the ministry. Maybe the ministry hasn't always treated people fairly or properly. As time goes on, can I promise that will never happen again? No. No, you can't know for sure. You just can't know. Maybe a boss at work or whatever it is. But it's sort of like a round four, where you get a few punches and you're not expecting it, maybe. The sucker punch or that uppercut. You know, guy's boxing along and you think he's going to hit you this way. The uppercut comes and catches somebody under here. You know, Jesus Christ even went through this type of experience. I believe it was for a purpose. He went through the type of experience even where the Father turned his back on Christ. Now, he didn't do it out of hate or anything like that, but I believe he did it for a purpose, so that Jesus would even understand that. That feeling when somebody betrays you, somebody that you're trusting in, you have confidence in, and there's a betrayal that takes place. Let's look at it. Matthew 27, verse 46. I think that was one of the reasons why this was done. It wasn't because God was turning away from Christ because Jesus was a sinner or he was horrible or he was bad or whatever. But Jesus had to feel that he was on his own. And possibly it was because Christ was taking the sins of mankind upon himself, and so God turned from that for that short time. But about the ninth hour, in verse 46, Jesus cried out with a loud voice and he said, "Eli, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," that is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And sometimes, don't you feel like you're on your own? You know, a person sometimes feels that way. Boxers are that way. But as fighters, sometimes we have to be willing to stand on our own. And God says that. Christ shows that. When we made a choice of coming to follow this way of life, he said, you have to be willing to give up anybody, anything, even your own life also. So Christ is saying, you're going to be on your own perhaps at some time in the future, and you've got to be willing to give up everything and stand on your own, no matter what. No matter if you are forsaken by everyone, no matter if you're the only person left standing anywhere, you've got to be willing to stand on your own and to continue following God's way of life. And I believe the Father wanted Jesus to know what it was like for our sake to be on his own totally and have that feeling. God wants to understand and wants us to understand that he went through everything that we are. Round five. Dong. I should have brought a bell up. You know, you could ring. Dong. Round five. Maybe we've gone through round five. Perhaps it's health problems. And we sort of maybe are resentful towards God that he hasn't done something about it. That happens. You know, human mind works in funny ways. God gives us life, but he allows us to have some kind of a problem. Then we get mad at him. You know, we get things out of perspective. You know, people get things out of perspective. There's a little saying in here. I think it's in this book. If I wrote it down somewhere. Oh, here it is. Thomas K. Mattingly II, Apollo 16 astronaut, he says, it's very hard to take yourself too seriously when you look at the world from outer space. Very hard to take yourself too seriously. And it's sort of like that, you know. Would we have the right to get mad at God? At anything? If he takes away everything we have and kills us, do we have a right to be angry about that? No. God can take our lives anytime he wants. He has a right to do that. He can do anything he wants with us. He has a right to do that. And he's training us, getting us ready for his family. And he's got to do certain things. He knows the battle's coming up. He knows the responsibility is going to be only ours at certain times. And once you're in the ring, once you're in the middle of the ring fighting, you're on your own. Thankfully for us, we've got somebody in our corner. It's sort of like the tag team match. Who you got in your corner? God. That would give you a bit of confidence, right? You're not totally on your own at all. In a sense, you are, as far as your training and taking it properly and handling it correctly, doing what we're supposed to be doing. But in another sense, we're not on our own at all, because you can tag off with God anytime. God, I need some more help. I need a bit of help here. And God's got big boxing gloves. He can take on anything and defeat it. Jesus went through an incredible, horrible in a way, it was a kind of a training himself. He went through some awful stuff. Let's go to Isaiah 53. Just take a quick look at it. He wanted to go through these things so that he would know. He made that choice. I shouldn't say he wanted to go through these things. I should say he made a choice to go through these things. He chose to do it voluntarily so that he would understand. Who has believed our report, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, as a root of the dry ground. He has no form or comeliness, and when we see him, there's no beauty that we should desire him. He is despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. You know, that's quite a description, isn't it? God allowed himself to become this way, to be described as a man of sorrow, acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised. We did not esteem him. Surely he's borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted, but he was wounded for our transgressions. He went through all of this. He was bruised for our iniquities. Went through all of it for us. The chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray, and we've turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, and he opened not his mouth. God took the training. He went through it. Do we go through it without opening our mouths? You know, do we go through the kind of training that we need, something that isn't so pleasant, without saying too much? Or usually is it we tell everybody we can think of, oh, woe is me. Woe is me. Oh, I got this problem. I got that problem. Most of the time it's like that, because we're human, and God understands that. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, as a sheep before its shearers is silent, he opened not his mouth. He didn't complain. He didn't moan. So I've got to go through this. That's a choice I've made. If I don't want to, God, if there's some other way, let me have that other way. But he couldn't do it. He was taken from prison, from judgment. Who will declare his generation? He was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgressions of my people he was stricken, and they made his grave with the wicked, but with the rich at his death, because he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. A good phrase to understand. God made a choice. He allowed it to happen, and it was done with his full will that he was to go through this training. He has put him to grief. Christ went through an awful lot. Sort of like any rounds we've gone through are pretty mild, pretty minimal. We go through tests, and we go through the tests sort of involuntarily. Jesus made a choice. I'm going to go through this. He knew he could stop at any time. He could make a different choice, but he went voluntarily. I'll put up with this. I'll go through it, like the fighter who goes in there and starts pounding. He knows he's going to feel bruised and bashed. When you see those guys when they finish some of those fights and their whole face is just all swollen up and pounded, and the last guy standing usually wins, or they make some kind of choice. They go through a lot of bumps and bruises. But they do it, what for? Crown. They want to be crowned. Heavyweight champion of the world. And they want these big belts, you know, that they've got. They want some kind of a temporary crown. And they go through some awful stuff for that. Brethren, if we could really get in our minds and really have it clear and bright and shiny in our minds, the destiny we've got, none of this would seem very significant at all. None of the problems, even though they're pretty horrid. Some of the losses and things that people have gone through have been pretty awful. Pretty awful. And yet, for the crown that we have waiting for us, far, far greater than anything physical, and yet here's these people, they'll go through a lot to get a gold medal. They go through tremendous training, and they give up a lot, but to get that gold medal. And all it is a lousy little piece of gold medal. And they go through tremendous amounts of training and watch themselves, and they're careful, and they fight, and they get injured, and they have to rehabilitate, and they go through all this stuff for a piece of metal. We're going through it for a lot more than that. We go through our rounds. Round six might be financial setbacks. Somebody, you know, runs into problems, loses everything. Again, part of training. Jesus had a guy with him, Judas. And Judas was a thief. That was what it was all about with Judas. He didn't care about the poor. You know, he's talking about, you know, making sure that we take care of the poor. Well, Christ allowed that. Christ knew exactly what was going on. There was no surprises. Jesus knew Judas's mind. He knew exactly what was going on in his head. Could read his thoughts anytime he wanted to. And yet he allowed that to take place and to go on. Never said anything about it. Never stopped him. John 12 and verse 6, talking about Judas. These things happen. Mistakes are made. John 12 and verse 6. This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and he had the money box, and he used to take what was put in it. And he was making this story about, verse 5, about this fragrant oil not being sold. And put on a good show. Jesus didn't stop that. He knew exactly what was going on. He could have done whatever he needed to do. But he didn't. Sometimes problems happen. Difficulties take place. God can change them if he needs to. And yet, you know, sometimes Jesus just allows things to happen. We have to sometimes allow, I guess, get a bloody nose once in a while. If you're fighting, you'll get a cut. or a bloody nose once in a while. And that just happens. It's part of the battle. Round 7, bong, bell rings. Marriage. Some have suffered unhappy marriages. Some have suffered problems in their marriage. Jesus experienced both. He even experienced the fact of not having a mate, not being married. Christ never was. Not married to a woman, I mean, as a physical human being. But he experienced these things. Let's go to Jeremiah 31 and verse 32. He doesn't expect people to do anything he hasn't done himself. These things happen. Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 32. And when you think about it, Christ, God the Father, have a lot stronger feelings and emotions than we ever had. Right? Far, far more feelings. God has far more feelings as far as love than we ever have. Jeremiah 31 and verse 32. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant which they broke, though I was a husband to them. Well, Christ acted as a husband to Israel. He did everything for them, took care of them. And he says, I'm going to make a different covenant. He says, they broke that covenant, messed it up. Christ experienced that. And Jesus himself stayed single in his earthly life. And he was a very strong, powerful man, but he stayed single. And I believe it was because God is love. He is love. He's concerned about people. He could have married. Jesus could have married if he'd wanted to. He had that choice. But he knew what was going to happen to him, and it wouldn't have been fair to marry somebody because he knew he was going to have to die. God has too much love to do something like that, to cause unnecessary heartache and hurt. Though he could have done that, and he had a right to do that, he did not do it. He made a choice. Round 8, the bell rings. False friends. Now we might feel like we're in another battle. You have that difficulty. As time goes on, it's going to be worse. Matthew 24 and verse 10. Is it always going to work out in the worst possible scenario? No, not necessarily, but we need to be prepared just in case it happens. Matthew chapter 24, verse 10. It was always difficult to figure out how this could happen. Many will be offended and will betray one another. That was always kind of difficult, because I thought, you think in your mind as a human being, you just think, well, I don't think this person would betray me, or that one would betray me. But we don't know. We just don't know. Take a look at what the verse actually says. Matthew 24 and verse 10. Then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. So what are we going to do? See, we should ask the question, okay, what if I get in this boxing ring and this guy hits a little harder than I thought he was going to hit? What should I do? Okay, that's when you learn to dance better. You dance, you adjust your fight. You don't get in there close with him and trade punch for punch. You get back. Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali was the ultimate boxer. And he'd stand back there and nobody could hit him. He was so fast. But he would adjust his fight because he wasn't the heaviest puncher either. But he was fast. The guy was boxed like a lightweight. He's 225 pounds, I think, or 230 pounds. Boxed like a lightweight. You couldn't even see his hands move. So he adjusts his fight. He didn't want to get in there and just trade punches with somebody who was a real puncher. So we might get a harder punch than we're expecting. But how are we going to react? Well, you adjust your fight. You say, well, Jesus Christ went through that. He went through this, went through that. Christ went through this experience, that experience. Am I going through anything that he didn't go through? How does he expect me to act? What do you do if somebody betrays you? How do you treat them? When we first looked at this years ago, it was difficult to really understand. Let's go to Mark 13 and verse 12. I think it's easier to understand now, after you see the heresy that has taken place and some of the treachery that took place. Mark 13 and verse 12, people who acted anything but Christian, when we see how how Christians are supposed to act, when you look in the Bible and you see how people have acted, anything but, not even close. Should that surprise us? Mark chapter 13, verse 12. Now brother will betray brother to death. I believe this is more in the church than out of the church. I think it's a brother in the church. Well, at least attending church, what we consider brothers. And a father his child, and the children will rise him up against parents and cause him to be put to death. I guess you could look at it as a physical thing or as a spiritual thing. But most of us, our parents aren't even around. In many cases, they're not even here. Or our brothers and sisters, we don't even have any contact with them. I think most of this is probably going to take place in the church. Many will be offended and will betray one another. Again, I didn't write it. You know, you look at it and you think, I hope that never happens. I hope it doesn't take place. But it's there. Will that be round eight? Will the bell ring and round eight will take place and we'll be betrayed? Possibly. We just don't know. But I can see a little more now how this could happen than I could 25 years ago. Round nine, the bell rings, persecution sets in. Jesus Christ suffered persecution. Let's go to Matthew 5 and verse 11. What does he say about it? Matthew 5 and verse 11. We live in a time when there's very little persecution. You can talk basically openly about your religion. You can talk about it at work, or you can talk about other people, ask questions. And it's pretty well open. You don't have too much trouble that way right now. But it may come that someday we won't want to talk about it at all. Verse 11, blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad. That's part of our training. How do you react to somebody who persecutes you? You know, I read a story about a guy who was in one of the concentration camps. And he used to go around, you know how little food they got? He used to keep a piece of bread, a little piece of bread, of his bread. And he'd go around the camp and he'd find somebody who looked like they needed it the most. And he'd take that little piece of bread and give it to that person. And somebody asked him about it afterwards. He kept doing this the whole time he was in there. And they asked him about it and they said, he said, nobody can make me think the wrong way. No matter what they do to me, they cannot make me think in a wrong fashion. So I just choose what I'm going to do and the way I'm going to think. And God's going to ask us, well, how do you think? Maybe we'll go through some of this persecution. Maybe it'll hit. And he'll want to see how we react. What's your training? How do you react when you're fighting and a guy hits you in the face? Boom. Do you get mad? Anybody, right? If anybody read anything about boxing, that's the worst thing you can do. You don't get angry. They do not fight with anger when they're boxing. Because if you get angry, you lose, generally. Because you'll do something stupid. You'll get mad and you'll kind of go, boom! By the time you get the swing, the punch away, the guys hit you. And so they, you know, good analogy. How do we react if somebody treats us badly? How do we react? What goes on in our mind? And Jesus tells us exactly how we're supposed to react. There'll be people who will say all kinds of evil things. He says, verse 12, rejoice, be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You're in the same boat as a lot of good people. That's what he's saying. We're in the same situation. But there will be people, Matthew chapter 13 and verse 21, there will be people who will react the wrong way. Matthew 13 and verse 21, talking about the parable of the sower. Yet he has no root in himself. This is an individual who comes in, endures only for a while, for when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. There are people who have done that. Got a little bit of persecution, didn't like it, and quit. John 15 and verse 20, Jesus says to us, remember this. He says, I'm giving you a word of advice. John 15 and verse 20. Remember the word that I said to you. A servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. They're going to do that. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. So it may not be going on wholesale right now, but there's a good chance that it is going to start, that it's going to happen sometime in the future. So how do we handle those persecutors? God says you learn to love them. Learn to love them. That's part of our training. When people spit in Christ's face, what did he do? Did he hit him back? Christ was not a fighter, a boxer. He didn't do that. He didn't hit back, never struck back, never reviled somebody who reviled him. Love your enemies, he says. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. Doesn't say you stick around necessarily and get beat up. You can still run away. You can still get away. No, don't take stuff that you don't need to take. Round 10, the bell goes. How about this as maybe a round that we're going to have to face? The demise of the work. It's going to be shocking for some, isn't it? It's going to be actually really shocking. As up till now, basically, we've been able to really go and do whatever we wanted. We've been able to rent, you know, space in magazines. You've been able to pass out magazines. You've been able to do whatever shows you want to do on TV or radio. Pretty well anything you want. You can advertise in magazines, papers. You know, people will write in and get booklets, etc. But there's going to be a shock in the future, because there's going to be a time when the work will be completely impossible to do. We won't be able to do anything. It'll be shut down. The doors will close. And sometimes people turn inward. There are people now that really aren't interested in doing any work. There are those who stay home basically now, don't go to church, and they're not interested in doing any work at all, because they've been turned off totally by what happened. Just been virtually turned off. And it's amazing. You see, that they don't realize that what happened is they're in this fight. Instead of punching back and taking the punches and keep on rolling with the punches, you know, that's a good thing to remember too. Boxers do that. They roll with the punch. You don't stand here and you see a punch coming, stick your head out. You roll with the punch. You'll see them. They're always bobbing. They're always weaving back and forth. The punch comes at them, they let their head roll back. Because it doesn't hurt to the same degree. But if they stood there, go ahead, hit me, you know. Bang! Okay, you're finished. You roll with the punches. And that's a good thing to keep in mind as a Christian. Because the punches are going to come. They're going to come. And we need to learn to roll with them a little bit. Roll back. Bounce back. You know, you'll see some fighters do that. They're just about out on their feet and bang, they're saved by the bell, and they go over and they give them some smelling salts and splash cold water on the face, and the guy, you know, has a little break and he gets back up and he's ready to go again. And he was just about out of it. You see some of them, they really were close to being knocked out. They come back and win the fight possibly. And it's, you know, sometimes that's a really good example to see, because that's what we want to do. We want to come back and win the fight. There will be a time, however, in the future when the work is finished. It's going to be done. Romans 9, verse 28 says, "For he will finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because the Lord will make a short work upon the earth." Some people might be blown out of the water by that. They might say, "Oh, God's not with us. God's not with us because all the doors are shut," and whatever. You know, you can find that people will react that way. But there will be a time when we won't be doing a work in these countries that we live in. We don't know what will cause that exactly, maybe just the fleeing of the church or whatever. But if we are around, we need to be trying to spread the word and doing it as much as we can. Seems sometimes now it seems like we're doing it in a more personal way even, spreading the word, in a sense. The things do come up like that. Amos 8, verse 11, "Behold, the days are coming, that the, says the Lord God, that I will send a famine on the land. Not a famine of bread or a thirst for water, but of hearing the words of the Lord." There will be a time when you can't get the truth. One of the things we got to be careful about is make sure we don't get sidetracked by other things. Don't get faked out by the other boxer, because Satan will certainly try to do that. What has many brethren that's happened to them, sidetracked into other things and drifted away from doing the job that we're supposed to be doing. One of the things to remember, I guess if you said the odds are You know, what do you sort of comes to mind? Oh, odds, betting money, right? So this guy, let's say, is coming into this fight. Most of us, if we said, when you came out of the world into the church, what was your record? What was your actual record? Probably 0 and 904. You know, you see these boxers. What's his record? 32 and 1 or 42 and 1. Most of us, when we came to the church, our record, as far as how well we were doing in the world, would have been 0 and 900 or whatever, something like that. But you know, our record, if you went to the Las Vegas odds makers and you said, let's get all the factors and put them all in place and know that God is in these people's corner, who's going to win the fight? The odds makers would probably give you pretty good odds. They'd say, well, I think these people are going to win. And I think that's something we should, maybe the way we should look at it. The next round that comes up, whatever it will be, whatever it is, when the bell sounds, we've got to remember that God is in our corner. God is there. He's ready to tag and come in the ring. He doesn't just sit there and give you smelling salts when you get your head pounded in. God comes into the ring with us. And he'll probably say something like, okay, keep your left hand up a little higher. Keep your elbows more in front of your body so he can't hit you. You know, get your right hand there. Okay, turn it a little bit so that it, you know, you can swing a little harder, a little tougher. God will keep helping us that way. We can't lose a fight when God's with us. You may lose a battle. You might get punched a couple of times, but you can't lose the battle if God is with you. The fight at the end of the round, whatever, it's a 10-round or a 12-round match, you'll be standing still. You might be bruised a little bit, might be a little bloody, might have a little, you know, something on the side of your nose, a little bit out of shape or something. We might feel like our nose has been broken sometimes. You might have sore spots, swollen spots, but you know, you'll still be standing. As long as God is there, as long as God is with us, you can't lose. If we had God with us, at the end of the fight, we'll still be standing. Nobody will be able to get us, knock us down so that we aren't there at the end. We'll be finishing those rounds. Let's go to Romans 8, verse 34. That is a promise from God. He's going to be there. He'll be with us. Romans 8, verse 34. Who is he who condemns? It is Christ who died and furthermore is also risen, who is even at the right hand of God, who also makes intercession for us. He's there in the ring, lifting up our arms, holding them up. Verse 35, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, you're going to have some kind of a trial that is going to wipe you out, destroy you? You're going to have a battle and somebody's going to knock you cold and win the battle? No, it's not going to happen. Tribulation or distress, is that going to get to us when we're distressed about something? No. Persecution? Are people going to be able to destroy you? No, they can do whatever they want to your body, but they can't touch your mind. If you don't allow them to, they can't touch your mind. You always have total control over your own actions and your reactions and your feelings and your desires. They can't do anything to your mind. They can try. How about famine? Is that going to get to us? We're going to die of starvation? Nope. God promises that we'll be taken care of. Nakedness, peril even? Peril of what? People who stab you in the back? No, it's not going to get you. You can easily be turned off by those things. You know, people are. You get stabbed in the back in the workplace, people just quit their jobs and go somewhere else. You know, that can happen very quickly. Get stabbed by somebody else. You can easily quit and leave. You don't have to at all. Peril of what? Of anything, or sword even. What if we get killed? Is that going to defeat us? Nope, because the resurrection occurs and we're still standing. End of the round 12 or whatever it is, or round 15 or whatever it might be, is still going to be standing because Christ is going to lift us up. Verse 37, yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. God is with us. He'll take care of us. For I am persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, he's talking about Satan or the demons, they cannot get to us. Nothing, any created thing, height or depth, whatever, says, nor any other created thing, in verse 39, shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. Nothing, brethren, if we're with God, he tells us, you draw near to me, and I will draw near to you. But we better not go into that fight without God in our corner. That's the bottom line, right? You don't want to go in there without having trained, because that's what God is doing. He's getting us all in shape and training us. But you don't want to go in there without having God in the corner, because he might need to give us some smelling salts once in a while. Shake us up a little bit. Bring us back to where we need to be. God will allow that to happen sometimes because we need to get straightened out perhaps. But it's amazing what God has done with us. We could go through many scriptures about it. Let's just go to one last one. In Romans, 1 Timothy 6 and verse 12. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 12. We are to fight the good fight of faith. Fight the good fight, God says. Be there. Make sure you train properly. Make sure you know what's going on. Know your opponent. Yeah, that's important, too. You've got to know the opponent. When teams take on other teams, they always study the play games, the games of the plays of the last week, and they check and see what kind of plays they have. If you're a fighter, I watched a guy who was an incredible fighter one time, and just watched him pick apart the other opponent. Got in there, and he watched. It was amazing just watching the fight, because you could see him. He was feeling out the other person in the first round, swinging back and forth, you know. And you could just see he was baiting, like doing something that he'd see how the other guy reacted. And he was always doing this one particular move. He'd be bouncing, and he'd do this one particular move. Every time he did that, he noticed the other guy's hand went down like so. And I watched the whole thing, and it was about the third round, I think, and he'd kind of got them all fixed up. And he suddenly goes like this, put his hand down here, the other guy dropped his hand, and he just, pow, knocked him absolutely cold on the... Because what he'd seen was a weakness. He'd figured this out, you know, and he saw this weakness. He knew his opponent. Now, in our case, we've got the power with us. Our opponent is Satan. He's going to try to find your weaknesses, but, you know, we know his. He's finished. He's already finished. We don't want to go his way. You don't want to follow his way of life at all, because he's finished. He's done for. He's out for the count. Yet he's still trying to fight and cause trouble and problems. We don't want to go his way. We want to go the way of God. And as long as we do that, as long as we draw near to God, we'll fight the good faith. He says, fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life, to which you were also called. You weren't called to anything else. We were called to eternal life. We weren't called to damnation, to defeat. We were called to eternal life. He says, I have confessed the good confession in the presence of many witnesses. It's a time of year, brethren, when we have to look at ourselves. We're starting to come up to the Passover season where we need to examine ourselves, look at ourselves, see how we're doing, see how our training is going. And what round are we in? I don't know. You might be able to come up with 25. Maybe you're in round 30 in your life. You've had these different things happen. But it doesn't matter, because at the end of the fight, you'll be standing. When we're close to God, we're following His way of life, and we have Him in our corner. We can examine ourselves at this time of year and look at ourselves and say, what are we doing? How are we doing? But let's realize, brethren, that we're going to win the fight. You can get in there. Doesn't matter what the round is. Doesn't matter who the opponent is. We'll win the fight because we've got God Almighty with us. Jesus has gone through everything we've gone through. He's experienced all the things. He understands how we're feeling. He understands where the trials are coming from and what they are. He knows exactly because he's gone through all of that. So let's fight the good fight with God in our corner.